Welcome to Words and Pictures, the show about the narrative arts. I'm your host, S.W. Konser, and today we're talking about the independent film scene with an influential director, writer, and producer. Her company, Hearts and Sparks Productions, has been creating short films with important themes, and now she's completed a feature film, Mother of Color. Dawn Jones Redstone, welcome back to Words and Pictures.
Hello. Thank you. I'm delighted to be here. I think I was with you with my very first short, Sister in the Brotherhood, as well. So it's been fun to have conversations over the years.
Yeah, I'd like to talk about that, but you've brought a couple of folks with you.
Yes, this is our amazing production team. We have Ashley and Tara. Can you all introduce yourselves?
Hey, I'm Tara Johnson Mettinger, and I am a producer on Mother of Color.
Tara, you're also the executive director of POWFEST, the Portland, Oregon Women's Film Festival.
I am. So that is 15 years strong, POW Film Fest. We feature women directors and non-binary directors and bring all of their projects to the screen here in Portland. And actually, that's how I met Dawn Jones Redstone years ago and featured her film, Sister in the Brotherhood, at the festival, and we've continued our friendship, and I was super excited when she asked me to be part of this project. I was in right away.
Yes.
And Ashley Song, you're the co-founder of Desert Island Studios.
Yes, that's right. I work as an actor and producer here in Portland, and I co-founded Desert Island Studios with my partner to create more accessibility and affordability to film resources for independent narrative storytellers like Dawn. And Dawn and I met actually because she hired me to act in a short film that she made. And then we started producing together. And we've been friends ever since.
It sounds like you wear a lot of hats. I hear you're also a classically trained pianist.
Oh, wow. Yes, I am. It's true. I do.
The deep dive, Ashley?
On Ashley's song.
Yes, I was
every classically interview, I discover something new about you.
It's true. I actually, those skills come into play both in my performance as an actor and as an educator as well. I teach musical theater to teenagers through Portland Center Stage's Teen Academy. And so I often am employed to do accompaniment for kids. And that's very fun.
Well, let's see. I want to start off with Dawn here. Yeah, Dawn, the first time we talked about your work, you were screening your short film, Sister in the Brotherhood, about a woman of color breaking into the building trades. And this film very closely reflected your own background.
Yes, it's true. Yeah, I used to be a journey level carpenter, and then I went on to help other women access careers in the construction trades at a nonprofit called Oregon Tradeswomen. And then eventually I left that and started Hearts and Sparks Productions. And that's when kind of when I started making shorts as well. But Sister in the Brotherhood is kind of the one that like kicked off my narrative film making. So I'll always remember it. It's still going. Like, people still watch that film, and it's incredible. I'd love to see how you can create something and it resonates with people and just continues to create dialogues and move people.
I guess I'm wondering if you've had women who are in the trades come up to you and say, hey, this was really influential for me, because I've seen more and more, say, advertisements looking for women in the trades.
Yeah, it's definitely, there's a lot more awareness on why it's important to help women access those living wage careers. It's one of the few where you don't have to get a college degree. But I mean, that same kind of resonance is what we're hoping to do with Mother of Color also.
Well, yeah, let's talk about Mother of Color. This is your breakout feature film, and it's been, what, 3-4 years in process?
Yeah, I think we could say it will be 4 years probably by the time it gets out like with distribution and all. Yeah, it's been a journey, and I've just been really fortunate to have Ashley and Tara in it with me, too.
A lot has happened in the last 4 years.
Yes. No kidding. Yeah, it's, I think some of that's in the film. in a way, like both in the story as well as just like how we all came together in a time during COVID to make this thing.
Well, could you give a little bit of a synopsis and we'll kick around some of the themes that come up?
Yes. So Mother of Color is a story of a single mother of two, played by Ana del Rocio, who finds out that she has this chance to interview for a job that she's been hoping for. It's like the job of her dreams. But at the same time, she doesn't have childcare because it's the next day. And she begins receiving these messages from her ancestors. And so over the course of the film, there's this kind of those two things happening. She's getting these messages that are intensifying and kind of mysterious. And she's also like just trying to get to this interview, and it all kind of comes to a head.
Now, your own background is Latina. You have Mexican-American heritage. I should mention also, you are a mom yourself, but not a single mom.
Correct. I have a wife, and we are raising our daughter together.
How much did you draw on your own background?
Well, I guess, so there's kind of these two things. One is about single motherhood, and the other one is about this ancestral trauma, which is what we're talking about in the film. And Ana actually was the inspiration for that character, the main character, Noelia, because Ana in real life is a single mother of two who's also worked in politics. And so I interviewed her, and we talked a lot about, you know, what her life is like and the kinds of hard decisions she faces between childcare and her career goals. And, you know, some of that I've experienced as well, just as a parent, you know, single or not, like being a caregiver, that's the kind of thing that comes up. And then there's the second piece around ancestral trauma, which I personally resonate with, but it's also kind of a way to talk about both the big picture and the small picture at the same time, in the sense that, you know, we're hinting at this idea that there's a wound that she's carrying that needs to be addressed before she can kind of go on. And for me, that wound is just the fact that we all carry the trauma of living in a white supremacist culture. And I think that we'll kind of see. I don't want to give away too much about the film, but in my mind, like, that's what's happening. Like, we don't need any research to to know what that means. But being alive right now is it's tough times.
And so the crux of the movie is that your main character has all of the talents. She has all of the background. She has the resume, but there's just not this support system that somebody who came from a comfortable background, you know, wealth handed down, somebody like that would not even think of. And then there are characters, supporting characters in your film that just don't understand the problems that your character faces.
Yeah, that's it. You nailed it. We're kind of depicting that. And I think it will be interesting for folks that are not in these kind of situations to get a sense of what that's like. You know, like we found out yesterday that we're going to have a group from a Oregon Child Care Center come screen the film. And I'm excited for folks to come and see this depiction, because that's the thing that, you know, happened with Sister and the Brotherhood. When you show someone's experience, I am so curious, like, how they will react or, you know, find the film to be, having maybe lived through some of these moments in their own lives.
So in a number of your short films, and now in your feature films, protesters show up. There's a theme of protest running through. And I don't know if this was any influence on you, but my immediate thought was, there's a film back in the late 60s by Haskell Wexler called Medium Cool. And it used the protests at the Democratic National Convention as a backdrop for its narrative.
Huh. Yeah, I've seen some there's another film going around right now about the most recent election too, that has protests as the backdrop. But I mean, in one way, I'm like playing with what is now a stereotype about the city. Like, Ashley and I happened to be in a meeting the other day where people were saying they were concerned about filming in Portland because they weren't sure if it was safe. You know, so there is that sense, but we're also depicting things that are completely outside of what you think the city looks like in terms of what gets filmed here. So, you know, having a film with a Latina lead who, you know, a female who's a politician or, you know, politically oriented, like, that's not the kind of film that we usually see coming out of Portland.
You obviously called in some heavy hitters when it was time to make your first feature. And Tara Johnson Mettinger is one of the people to go to, top of the list, I'm sure.
Yes. And, you know, as Tara mentioned, we met a while back, and I knew that for a project of this size that I would need to have folks that I knew and trusted that could, you know, have my back during production and could also help me learn about doing things at this level. And so, you know, both Tara and Ashley were the folks that I knew I had to go to.
Tell us more, Tara.
Sure. Well, Don and I had coffee one afternoon, and I was pretty fresh off of delivering my first feature film as a director and producer. I certainly have a lot more producing credits in my background and have been involved in a variety of productions here in Portland. And, you know, many of them have gone on to distribution, some pretty substantial film festival screenings. And so I've just been able to like bank that experience and bring it forward into all of my productions and really prioritize helping folks that I believe in, and Dawn being one of them. And when she came to me and said, I know you've got a full plate, and but I really want to do this, and I'm curious if you'd like to be involved. And I mean, it was I think before I even read the script, I was like, absolutely, you know, and because for me, it was like, it's about that experience of working with people that you believe in and that you want to help through your own experience and whatever I could bring to the table. You know, filmmaking is rough. And regardless of whatever budget level you are working at, there are barriers that you hit all the time. And whatever I could do to bring my experience of how I was able to swiftly handle things into this production to help it be as smooth as possible. You know, of course we hit, you know, there was not enough time. There was not enough money, you know, just things that happened during production. And when Ashley came into the fold too, it was like, we had never worked together, but we've really complemented each other in terms of our skill set because I had been so immersed in my own project. There was all these folks that were coming up through the production scene here in Portland that I just hadn't had a chance to meet. And Ashley was, you know, currently working on so many projects, very involved with a lot of crew. And so when I came into Mother of Color and with Ashley's experience with people, you know, coming up in the industry, we just made a great team. And bringing all of our skill sets together, I could bring more, you know, more of the like distribution experience into this project, because honestly, you need to start thinking about those kinds of things when you're pre-production anyway. And so, because everything goes by so quickly, and here we are, we're at the, like the tail end of post-production, starting to screen the film and talking with distributors, and we're ready. We're ready for those conversations and to be able to get the film out to a wider audience. Ashley, do you want to chime in?
No, I mean, I loved working with Tara. And yeah, it's interesting kind of going into something as gargantuan as producing a feature film with someone that you've never worked with before. But I think Dawn really is the connective tissue for everyone on the team. And certainly that applies to the production team as well. And she had really good instincts about pairing us together. And she always approaches every project with that spirit of mentorship, which I think Tara and I also both share. And we were able to kind of go into this project with that mentality and made a great collaboration team because of that. Another great thing about Mother of Color and our production team that made it really unique is that it was comprised almost entirely of women of color, the whole crew. So not just the folks in the production team, but also, you know, the grip and, or, you know, the G&E crew, the people working the camera department, the PAs. We used it as an opportunity to bring in so many people who are oftentimes passed over the most and offered the least amount of opportunity in places like film production and in industries like ours. that's another really important theme of the film is lifting up those communities. And we wanted to reflect that in our production team and in the team that we put together to make this movie come to life.
And that was so important to us to talk about that. Actually, we put the data on the website of who we hired. So you can actually see what those percentages look like. And then we also had three director's shadows. And that came from me. I got to shadow Deborah Granick on the set of Leave No Trace. And it was like such a formative experience that I wanted to be able to offer that to some other women of color. So we also did that. We also had Pathways Placements, which is a special program through Oregon Film where we were able to hire folks and set them up with mentors. It was just very intentional. And I think like Tara and Ashley were the perfect folks to just make that happen because it's extra work. It's extra work to do that because the industry traditionally isn't made up of mostly women of color. So you have to find ways to, you know, help people move up or just search harder.
I was just going to extend on that because of all of that work that we were able to do, accessing Pathways, which is a program that's supported by the Oregon Film Office. We did our incentive programs. We also received a Reframe stamp, which is a stamp that recognizes diversity in production crews on screen as well as behind the scenes. And so those are things that we were also able to achieve to ultimately give the film like higher visibility. Once it is out there in the world, we have these opportunities through, you know, not only like we worked with some of the guilds, with Screen Actors Guild, Producers Guild, Reframe, we'll have those extensions of our networks that are inherent in the film to be able to promote it to a wider audience.
Well, Ashley and Tara, for our listeners who might not know what a producer's job is, maybe you can give some background about being producers on Mother of Color. The question might, more to the point, be what does a producer not do?
That's apt. I mean, there's a lot of different kinds of producers, honestly. You know, there's folks that are like the money folks, and there's the creative producers, there are line producers. And I like to think of myself as, you know, kind of a general producer in that I'm involved in a project from ideally inception. And so you're in with a director from that kind of development time as you're putting together like ultimately where you're going. So you're seeing the whole trajectory as one piece. And sometimes that can take years. It's been 4 years since Don completed the script and really started thinking about putting this together. There's so many elements to putting it together, not only like organizing what will ultimately be those 3 to 6 weeks of production, depending on the film. We had 13 days. it wasn't a lot, but a lot of pre-production, raising money to make this happen. So you're thinking about a lot of different things as you're tumbling towards production. And then when production happens, that's what everybody sees, right? Because that's the fun part. Like you have the whole team, you got the cameras, you got the actors, and there's so much energy and things that are happening at that point. And that's where Ashley's skill set as a really strong line producer came in to like help run that crew. And also us together as a team, like really thinking about the next day or the next several days. So we were like building the track as this like train was coming down, just to make sure that we kept it together, because production is really hard to go back into, right? Ultimately, you have pickup days and things like that, but like your principal photography is a very sacred moment in time for especially a feature film, because people move on, your crew goes off to other projects, actors may return to work, or they have life happens, right? And so it's really hard to recapture that.
Our job, really, if you were to boil it down to one sentence or one idea, is to take the project from a script to its completion. So there's all of this stuff that can happen between the text existing and then the actual final product, which is the final film. So as a producer, you know, I always joke that we're sort of helping move the big pieces, helping with development, being there on set, helping to crew up the team, all of that. But then there's a bunch of like not that glorious stuff that we do too, like put leaky bags of garbage into the back of our car because we have to take it.
That is like real life.
Yeah. They're just like, this needs to get done, so I'm going to do it. That's kind of the essence of what a producer does, is just like whatever needs to get done to make this thing happen, that's what we're going to do. It's the support position.
I'm also thinking about how Ashley's hand actually appears in the film because we needed a hand stand-in for some scenes. So some of the phone stuff is Ashley's hand.
You need a body double? I'm there.
Totally. Yeah.
It's true. It's so much work. There's so many details. And I mean, I'm so grateful to you too.
You're there at the beginning making the coffee, especially an independent film, right? You're there like plugging the coffee pot in, and then you're there, you know, there's that example of like dealing with human excrement, you know, it's like stuff that just has to be dealt with.
And then on top of that, like all the COVID stuff too.
Ashley
was doing really testing and I mean, it just, it was a whole other layer.
Yeah. And we had a really great supportive production team kind of bringing their skill sets into this and believing in Dawn's work too. I mean, that was the magic part about this, was everyone entered that in full support of Dawn. And then, you know, Ashley and I were there to just really like plug the holes, right? And just make sure everything could be taken care of and we were ready for the next day.
You're listening to Words and Pictures. I'm your host, S.W. Conser. And today we're talking with Dawn Jones Redstone, writer and director of the feature film Mother of Color. Also joining us are co-producers Tara Johnson Mettinger and Ashley Song. So Ashley, you relocated to Portland from New York after a successful stage and screen career there. What do you think of the scene here in Portland as opposed to New York? I mean, the theater scene and the film scene are obviously very different here.
Yes. Wow. Okay. Well, first of all, I don't know where you got your information from, but I don't know that I was that successful as a stage and screen presence in New York. It was a huge culture shock coming to Portland from New York for many different reasons. The first thing, of course, that I noticed about Portland, and I had heard about this before I moved out here, is that it's very, very white, which is very different from New York because it is such a multicultural and such a an ethnically diverse place. And also you're just, you know, you can go out to a bar and sit next to a billionaire. No problem. New York is just kind of a place where all of these different demographics are sort of smashed together in one really wild, really fast-paced city. So then I came to Portland and I didn't really know what to expect, but I knew it was going to be a change of pace. And so things are a lot slower and more relaxed here. But I will say that I have met some of the most creative and creatively talented people I've ever met in my life in Portland. And I think that part of that is because so many artists here have the time and space to really focus on their craft and really hone in on their artistry. And so, you know, because I'm kind of a mover and a shaker and I really want to get stuff done, and I've always been like that, I came to Portland and was just like, well, I really want to support these artists because they're doing such great work, and I would really love to give them a platform to get their work seen or for them to get the resources and things that they need in order to make their stuff. And that is kind of sort of how I got into producing, because I just love to support artists and give them a way to showcase their work. There are amazing artists in Portland. It's a town full of artists, but there's a tremendous lack of support for artists. And so I'm trying to really help create that infrastructure, not just in Portland, but throughout the state of Oregon, with my business, with my, you know, volunteering for the Oregon Media Production Association, all of that. I mean, I talk to legislators, I meet with like counselors, people in the city, because I'm trying to get artists the support that they need. And I feel like in New York, you know, I wouldn't really have had that opportunity as much to just like call someone up and meet with them at the city level and be like, hey, you know, there's a lot of cool stuff happening. How can we work together to to help promote all of these great artists.
You know, this just occurred to me, what you're talking about with support and one of the themes of Mother of Color, people having trouble advancing if they're single parents. I'm wondering if people just don't even try out for the lively arts like film or theater because childcare is so inaccessible in this society.
I think that's true, especially when you look at the larger productions, which tend to pay much higher wages as opposed to indie. The hours are intense, and I think it's hard to have a family. I know a few people that do it, but I think a lot of people try to find another way to go about it because it's just really hard to have a family and work those, you know, like 12, 16 hour days. I think that that's also kind of folds back into one of the reasons we wanted to have more women of color on set and give them opportunities is that they can potentially get that experience and get these connections so that they can get on bigger sets and have a way to earn a living. That's speaking more to just like people of color in general, as opposed to just single moms. But and we did see that happen with a couple of our PAs have just gone on to, you know, work in the industry at a commercial level. And it's really cool to see that. But I will say, just to tie it back into Mother of Color, like it kind of correlates with what Ashley's talking about in terms of making change, is like there's this irony in the film, in the sense that, you know, the character Noelia, she sees that there aren't these supports for single mothers. And one of the ways that she can help create those is by being in office and being able to create, you know, policy and change the way things are done. But she can't ever get there because she's a single mother. So there's just like this, you know, how do you help people that are falling through the cracks get to the point where they can help create that change so that they're no longer falling through the cracks?
You know, I spent some time back at the end of the last century being part of the crews on live productions, commercials and feature films. And the environment back then was not what you would call nurturing. I get the impression that a lot of people felt that way. Every set had its screamers and hotheads at the time. I'm wondering if the culture on film sets has improved since those days.
Not really.
On our
set was different.
Our set was great, but you know what? We're very spoiled because we're very rigorous at being in leadership positions about creating safe sets where people can have open lines of communication and are in an environment where they feel safe and seen and heard. But that is not the status quo for most film production sets. And I have routinely, especially as talent, been on sets where I am the only woman and the only person of color on the entire set. And there are people who will come up and say the weirdest stuff and will just like, you know, touch me or like do all kinds of weird things. And that's normal. That's considered normal on like a regular film set. And that hasn't changed. I mean, it's going to be up to people like Dawn and Tara and me to get in there and get into leadership positions and create that change, because the status quo is exactly as you said, it's still like that.
Yeah. It's a very unfortunate experience. I mean, I think that like when I first came back to Portland in the early 2000s and connecting with other commercial producers, people working in the industry, a lot of parents, and people were still hiding the fact that they were parents because they didn't want to get passed over from being hired. And I think about that and like, I don't want to hide that fact, you know, like that's part of my lived experience and being able to like bring that into my work ultimately. And like, we created an environment where we could support that and help people in those moments of need. And so like Ashley was saying, it just really takes people like us to say, okay, we're going to shift how things are done. And then ultimately, hopefully people take that to the next set and they implement that, right? And it becomes normalized and it's not a big deal. But like the things that Ashley was bringing up is very, very true. Like, you know, people, especially as a talent, if somebody's just coming up and putting hands on you, like, you know, simple things like asking for consent is like highly important. And like, being able to like bring that within the culture, it's a long haul to change that, but it's possible. And it really takes people saying, this is not working for me, and being willing to step forward, especially in leadership positions, to say, well, this is my set. This is how things are going to happen here and how we're going to be doing things differently from now on.
I mean, some of that's also depicted in the film in the sense that her boss sees her as a worker and nothing else. He doesn't see her as a whole person who's also a mom who also has to move her kid from one childcare to another. So she has to pretend like she's going to lunch, or, you know, he doesn't make space for the rest of her. It's just like, what can you give me in this moment at work as a worker? And I mean, so that ties into just like what we were trying to do on the set too.
Yeah.
Well, Tara just mentioned crew members trying to conceal their parenthood. In your film, Dawn, the main character is about to conceal her motherhood during a job interview. And that's when she gets a message from the ancestors. And tell us a little bit about that theme.
Yeah. I don't want to give away necessarily, I keep running into this. How do I talk about this without saying too much? I mean, honestly, I think what we're seeing in the film is she's being told to kind of decolonize her mind. Like she's a character that I've described as like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, but with two kids. You know, so she's someone that's, you know, very politically minded and like constantly thinking about that stuff, in part as a mother, because she wants to have a better world for her kids. But there's are ways that she is still kind of complicit in these systems that were never designed for her and that are constantly holding her back. And so part of the idea of the message with the ancestors is they're helping her understand how things have kind of weighed down perhaps her ancestors over time, and how she might heal to be able to see things differently.
Yeah, there's that metaphor of the wound that's passed down through generations, and the disconnection from the body that's brought on by that. And that's not particular to any one group, really.
No,
that seems to be that seems to be something that's legion in our society right now.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's I really recommend this book by Rezma Menakem called My Grandmother's Hands, but I think that's where I got really into this idea of how we may store oppression in our bodies. And, you know, he says that that particular line about how white supremacy is kind of a wound that we all carry. And so I think that that's kind of what's happening in the film, is that she's at this moment where, you know, this other possible path is unfolding in front of her. And she has to figure out how to get there. And she begins hearing this ringing in her ear that evolves over the course of the film into something bigger. And it's also, for me, it is a way to like tie in the day-to-day struggle of this character with what we see happening in our world right now. It's not, you know, it's so much bigger. It's climate change. It's war, it's, you know, kids in cages at the border, police violence, like all of this in my mind is connected to this same wound that we suffer. And that's everybody that's affected by that.
You know, you certainly don't shy away from political themes. One of your short films that made the circuit back in 2017 was a very timely dystopian sci-fi story. It was called We Have Our Ways.
Yes, definitely. We're trying to figure out how to get that out in the world right now, just because it continues to be timely, unfortunately. But yeah, that was about two folks who are kind of going underground to try to access abortion services, among other things. But these are the things that I feel like the people around me are thinking about and I'm thinking about. And so those are the kind of stories that I've been telling. But I'm also working on a couple of comedies, so I think I might be feeling a little more lighthearted after this.
Well, there tends to be a hierarchy in film production, and commercials and industrial films and promotional films aren't seen as the high art of feature films and documentaries. But you recently made a really interesting promotional film for the Port of Portland. in which you showcased the new terminal roof. And the interesting thing to me was you wrote the script and you went out of your way to include all of the people involved in this process. You sort of brought together the people who were harvesting the wood, who were in the trades, who were putting it together, who were designing, who had the vision.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to take too much credit for that because those were the people that were part of the project. Like it's you know, that wasn't necessarily me saying let's highlight these folks, although that's certainly what you know, the team and the creative director at PDX Airport wanted to involve. But those are just actually the people that they worked with. And yeah, we began working together and we were just talking about doing something different than maybe we had initially planned. And, you know, they asked me if I would consider writing something and I just kind of looked at everything they had and some of the stuff that we had already shot as part of like, you know, documenting the project. And I'm so blown away by what they're doing. They're like changing the way the industry actually works in terms of being able to track lumber from forest to frame, as they say. Like that's not something that is typically done. And it's really valuable to be able to highlight landowners that are actually using sustainable practices.
One of the things that's changed just dramatically in the last couple of years has been the film festival circuit. So how have you been keeping up with those changes?
Oh, wow. Yeah, it's funny. So last year, we actually got into this thing called U.S. Works in Progress in Poland. And, you know, I submitted to it and I wasn't totally sure what it was. And I was like, I'm just going to, you know, see what this is. And I found out that we got in and so we're like, okay, we're going to Poland. And Tara and I, you know, went there. And the imposter syndrome side of me was like, you know, why? I'm sure nobody applied to this thing. There's not, you know, it's because of the pandemic. No one's actually making films right now. And then I come to find out and talking with the folks through at this program in Poland, in Wrocław, Poland. And they said that actually, no, it was the exact opposite. There are more films now than ever before because of the pandemic and people having time to work on things and be creative and kind of focus in new ways. And so now we're, you know, same thing on the festival circuit. Every festival is like, we've had more entries than ever before. It's, you know, triple the number. So that is what's happening right now. And it's also, you know, like for me, I love the festival circuit and the chance to like be in the room with folks, but I also know we have a large audience that's outside of that. So it's one reason why I want to get to distribution and, you know, being able to be streaming so that anyone can watch it anywhere.
Let's talk about Mother of Color then. It's getting its local premiere coming up.
Yes, we are super excited to be at the Hollywood Theater on November 4th at 7 p.m. We've actually sold out of all of our advanced ticket sales, but we are going to release a few more the week of the event. So folks will have a chance to try to get those tickets.
And what's next for the project and what's next for all of you?
We're looking at distribution. We are continuing to be on the festival circuit and just delighted to have the chance to finally bring this thing out into the world. Tara?
Well, I always have my fingers in a lot of different projects. So I do have a series that I'm involved in called This Is Fine. I'm producing on that as well as directing the pilot episode. And we're shooting that starting in December. We're shooting the pilot. And then I wrote a new feature film. So I'm pretty excited about that. And Don has read it. I think Ashley is in the process of reading it. And at some point, maybe next year, it all depends on funding, right? To raise the money. But I would really like to get that off the ground at some point and direct and produce another feature and go through all of this process again.
starts all over again.
Yeah, it starts all over again. But this is a script that I've been working on in my brain for the last 20 years. So it's exciting that it's actually on the page now and that it can be visualized and ultimately tumble into production. So, Ashley?
Tara, I am. I told you I would read it and give you notes by the end of the month. I will hold you the next one. Say that on the air. It's going to happen.
Thank you.
Do not go back on my word.
I just want to nudge you about that.
Ask her what's on forgotten. The air.
Have you read it yet?
No, I haven't, because I want to sit down and take my time. Like, if I give script notes, it takes me hours to read through the whole thing. And it's like, it's a whole ordeal. So I really.
I truly appreciate that. Thank you, Ashley. Yeah, for being so thoughtful.
I am so busy all the time, and Tara and Don know this about me, and they can attest to this, and I know that they're very busy as well. But two really exciting acting projects that are coming up, just because it's going to be a little bit of a slow season for producing in the winter months here. So I am grateful for the opportunity to do a couple of acting gigs, including I am going to be playing Actor 3, aka Mary Hatch, and a few other characters in It's a Wonderful Life, a live radio play coming up at Portland Center Stage. And then in January and February, I will be playing Sherlock Holmes in Miss Holmes and Miss Watson, Apartment 2B by Kate Hamill. So yay. I'm excited. It's going to be really fun. So I'm excited to kind of get on stage and do some theater and probably take a break from producing while I continue to run the studio and consult with people. And I'm launching a couple of really cool programs this year as well through Oregon Films Creative Opportunity Fund, which I'm hoping to share more about soon, including a bi-monthly table read session that will culminate in a development grant that goes out to one screenwriter and one playwright. And then a sort of concierge service for mid to high level filmmakers and media makers who are from underrepresented communities to try and get them job placements on bigger productions. So that's another thing that I'm working on.
Well, gosh, you'll have to come back and tell us all about that.
I would love to anytime.
Well, you've been listening to Words and Pictures. I'm your host, S.W. Conser. And we've been talking today with Dawn Jones Redstone, writer and director of the feature film Mother of Color. Also joining us are co-producers Tara Johnson-Mettinger and Ashley Song. Dawn, Tara, Ashley, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you. It's always a pleasure. Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
And for those listeners who might be interested in finding out more about your work, where would they look?
They can go to motherofcolorfilm.com, and everything's there. You can learn about our upcoming screening at the Hollywood Theater.
You can follow me on Instagram, Ashley Song Official, or my studio, Desert Island Studios PDX, or my website, ashleysong.com.
And you can find me on Instagram. I am under the handle of Little Miss Anomaly. And I just launched a new website that kind of encompasses my 30 years of working in this industry, and that is littlemissanomaly.com.
Well, thanks to all our listeners on the radio dial and on the web. You can find an archived version of this show later today at kboo.fm/wordsandpictures. And be sure to follow us on social media at Words and Picture.